and welcome to Keeping It Real, the only podcast made by Chicago real estate brokers for Chicago real estate brokers. My name is DJ Paris. I am your host through the show. And coming up in just a few moments, we have an interview with top producer and all around great guy, Nico Apostle. But before we get to that, a couple of quick announcements. First of all, thank you for listening and supporting our show. If this is the first time ever hearing us, and every episode we get new listeners. So what we do here is we interview the top brokers in Chicago and ask them what they did to grow their business and have them tell their story in the hopes that other brokers who are interested in increasing their production can learn from the very best. So one way that you can support the show, aside from listening, which we really appreciate, is to tell a friend. If you have other brokers in your office that are wondering what the top people are doing, tell them about our show. They can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, really anywhere podcasts are served. Just search for Keeping It Real. And there's a few podcasts actually named Keeping It Real. So look for the one with DJs, you know, is my name, and look for that. And that'll tell you which one it is. You can also listen to every single episode we have on our website, which is keepingitrealpod.com. So all of our episodes can be streamed there. Also, you can contact us. So if you're somebody who wants to recommend a broker that we should be talking to that maybe we haven't reached out to and invited on the show, you can do that. Also, if you are a vendor and you want to advertise on our show, you can do that there as well. And then lastly, follow us on Facebook. We post a lot of good content there, and we interact with the listeners, and that's Keeping It Real Pod on Facebook. So check us out. All right, on to our interview with Nico Apostle. Okay, today on the show, we have Nico Apostle. By the way, Nico is one of the first people I ever met in real estate when I first got involved at my firm. And this was like maybe 7 years ago or so. So I'm really excited to have him on the show. But Nico, let me tell you a little bit about Nico. He entered the real estate business in 2001, and he has established himself as one of the top residential realtors in Chicago and a leader in the residential brokerage community. His primary focus is his sales practice, where he runs a high-level brokerage team. He is part owner of the brand new Keller Williams Chicago Lincoln Park office, which he helped launch last year. He is also co-owner of Owl Management, offering leasing and rental property management for his clients. Currently, he serves on the board of directors of the Illinois Realtor Association and has recently served on the board of directors of the Chicago Association of Realtors, where he has chaired multiple committees and co-founded the local chapter of the YPN, which is the Young Professionals Network. In February of 2016, Nico was a featured broker on HGTV's House Hunters renovation. He's a lifelong resident of Chicago's North Side. And Nico comes from a family that has been active in real estate investment, management, development, and sales for more than 40 years. He has extensive leadership training, which he previously used to teach agents in Coldwell Banker's new agent development program. And presently, as a member of his local Keller Williams Agent Leadership Council, over the past decade, Nico and the Apostle Group has earned a reputation for excellence and expertise, as well as caring and personal attention, earning him recognition among the top 1% of realtors in Chicago. So, and he's just a super nice guy. So welcome, Nico, to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here. Happy to support and look forward to this conversation.
The first question I almost always ask when I get somebody like yourself is, tell us how you got into real estate. And I know you have a history because your mom is such a prominent figure in the real estate community too, but tell us that story, if you don't mind.
Well, real estate was always dinner conversation when I was growing up. My father was a biology teacher. My mom was a history teacher when I was a kid, and they would do real estate on the side. My father would buy buildings, fix them up and sell them or rent them or things like that. And then he'd rent a few things rent apartments and sell properties occasionally over the summers when he was not in school. And then mom, when she became a full-time mom, and did volunteer work for the local Lincoln Elementary School and some of the local community groups. She did real estate on the side, sort of selling the things and renting the things that my father would get involved with. And then she, when I got into high school, she went full-time into real estate at a group called Century 21 Stanmeyer, which is long gone, but was a really great move for her. So it was always part of the dinner table conversation. And when I graduated college, I lived in New York City for the first 3.5 years and worked for a nonprofit organization. And then I moved back to Chicago in 2001 in end of August. And then I had all these job interviews lined up for marketing and sales type jobs. And then I was determined to sort of make my own way. But then September 11th happened and nobody was hiring. No one was even calling me back. And I had, you know, student loans to pay. I had things to, I had a rent to pay. Sure. So mom said, why don't you come be my assistant while you look for a real job? So I did started October 1st, basically, of 2001. And I learned a ton from her and her colleagues in that Coble Banker office. It was a magical time for that office. David Hall was our managing broker and was one of the most inspirational mentors I've ever had. And he was, it was a heady time. This was, you know, the market was really, really easy to sell things in. It was extremely fast paced and feverish. And David was bringing in people from all these different industries and they were bringing their knowledge and expertise. And we were collaborating to create, you know, new ways of doing real estate. And it was really fun. So I went off my own end of 2002 and, mom's phone always just used to ring and I always just oh, this is pretty easy. You just sit there, the phone rings and you help the clients out. And you know, she would have lots of lunches and lots of breakfasts and meet people here and there. And I always thought that was kind of silly. I also thought I was way more technically savvy than she, so I should probably be able to do this really easily right away. Sure. Well, first month I had one of my friends buy and I got a client off an open house. And 6 months later, I finally got my second client, my third right. client. And I realized that all those silly, ridiculous things that she did were things that generated those phone calls. And I was not doing any of those. And that's when the big aha came. And I said, the important thing is to stay involved in your friends and clients' lives. And that's how you do it. So I pivoted and I started helping every realtor out that I could find. And did a ton of open houses. Open houses, my stock and trade. I could not do floor time. I was terrible on the phones. The internet was not at a time when it was generating leads yet, but open houses was my game. It was the best thing to do. I would do 3 or 4 per weekend and just load them up. And then the trick to making an open house work is follow-up, relentless follow-up. And I just had, I didn't care and I had no fear and I had nothing to lose. And so I just went at it full force. And so by the end of that year, I think I had sold a little over 5 million my first year. And then the following year, I think I did 11. So 11 or 12.
And those are amazing first 2 years. I know, I wanted to go back to the open house for a moment. So I want to say specifically for people that are curious on how Nico got these open houses, I'm assuming you just went to brokers and said, I will do open houses for you.
Well, yes, absolutely. And one thing I learned was there's a lot of brokers who will offer up open houses. Hey, can someone sit my open house this Sunday? You know, from 10 to 12. And I would, the first few times I did that on my own, I realized those were crappy open houses. Sure. I never wanted to sit. No one wanted to sit them. Right. So instead, what I would do is when a listing came through the office that I would see, we published a hot sheet at the time the office did, and I would just read it every week, every day when it came through, and I would see what new properties came up and areas that I wanted to work in. And I would pick the open house that I wanted to do. And then as I got more proficient at this, I realized that the best way for me to establish myself as an agent was to show that I had, that I was active in the industry. So all my friends knew me as a nice guy, but they didn't know that I was any good as a real estate broker.
Sure.
So the way I countered that was by letting them know that I was not only a good person, but really active. So every time I sat in open house, I would plan it for not the this coming weekend, but the following weekend, to give me time to be able to invite my sphere to the open house. Say, hey, yes. I just listed this property's just been listed. I'm sitting in open house here this weekend. I'd love to have you join me. And I would try and just go through my contacts each week on that on that morning before the open house, and I would text, you know, a dozen or so of my people I hadn't seen or heard from in a while, and say, "Hey, I'm sitting here and I'm all alone. Why don't you come join me? Pop in for a minute. Come see this place." And right. So I built up a group of brokers in the office who loved to have me do their open houses because I would always get double or triple the traffic. And it didn't really matter if any of those people were interested in the house. All that mattered was that they could report back to their client that they didn't open the house and they had 18 people come through and nobody liked the place, so they better drop the price.
Well, and it to your sphere of influence, it makes you look incredibly busy, which of course I do once a month. I do an episode with Carrie McCormick. I don't know if you know Carrie.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And Carrie might be about the best. Her sweet spot is Instagram. And so Carrie constantly, and all of her posts look amazing, her pictures, but they're constantly reminding you just how busy she is and just how successful she is. And it's not even so much in a self-promotion way. It's branding, and she's able to say, "I've got this going on. I've got this going on. Come check this out." And you can't help but think like, "Oh my!" And she is one of the most successful realtors in Chicago. But you would also, without knowing that, you would think that just by, you know, and you were doing the same thing essentially.
Exactly, and I think that especially if you're new to this business, it's really hard to get someone to trust you with a very personal experience they have with the largest financial asset they have, with a place where they've had raised their kids and had experiences and showed off their stuff and had parties and where they sleep at night. It's very difficult for someone to trust you if you're new. And the way to get around that is just to basically be in their face all the time and show that you're a dynamo. And I had a lot of trouble at first because I had an age problem. I looked way too young to be handling a property in Lincoln Park or Lakeview or the Gold Coast. But what I made up for it with was I basically embraced it. And at first I started trying to be this guy that I wasn't, and I realized that no one was going to work with me. But instead what I did was I would always treat an open house like an interview for a listing. My goal has always been get listings, because if you have listings, you have something to advertise, some way to get other clients. So I approached it that way. Each open house is an interview for a listing. If I could get to the open house an hour or two early, then I could door knock and invite the neighbors to the open house and say, "Hey, I'm doing an open house over here at this listing. Why don't you come out and see me?" I would always dress nicely and I'd always bring a listing presentation book, you know, no CMA inside, but just the presentation materials. And I would always say, "Oh, yeah, I'm heading to a listing presentation after this, so I have this with me. Why don't you take a look at it?" And just quite simply, you know, I would use the line. I would say, "Who are you going to list your property with?" With Carrie McCormick, you know, she's got 22 listings right now, which means you're going to get 1/22nd of her time. Right. I have no listings right now. You'll get 100% of my time. And if I don't sell your place, I don't eat. So who are you going to have working for you? So basically, I embraced my noviceness as an asset instead of as a detriment. And I think that really helped me to get some of those first listings. And then over time, I obviously can't say that anymore. But you know, it was a great way when I was getting going to establish myself and to give myself credibility.
It's such a brilliant move. And I do want to you went through this very, very quickly, but I want to back up just a step and say, I wonder, or ask the question, and it's more of just a hypothetical, but I wonder what percentage of brokers who are doing an open house will ever knock on the next door neighbor's door to let them know. I bet you it's less than 5%.
So I bet it's even less than that. Yeah.
I'll bet you're right. And so just the thought, so what did Nico do? Let's go back. He first went around to the brokers in the office who had listings and said, "I'm going to make you look great in front of your seller. I'll do an open house for you," you know, for a property that, you know, he sort of wanted to be known as being active in that particular area. Mm-hmm. So Lincoln Park, Lakeview in particular. And that's a win-win for that broker with that listing. And then he went around to the neighbors and said, "Oh, by the way, I have this," and also promoted it with his own sphere of influence. And so all of a sudden you're like, "Man, this guy Nico's doing a lot of stuff." That's a really brilliant branding strategy. So thank you.
Absolutely. And when you start off, you know, you spend a lot of money, relatively a lot of money, to get into this business, and the flow of revenue that comes is really intermittent. And sometimes, and like in my case, I had 6 months of no money coming in. So you learn, it's a difficult business to get traction in, but what you have at your disposal most when you're getting going is time. And so if you use that time, if you really devote a lot of time, spend that free time that you have doing activities that will generate business, that'll get you in front of more people, that's how I think a new broker can get going much faster and shorten that learning curve and shorten that and flatten out that revenue curve so that, you know, you can get going. At this point now, what I crave more than anything is time.
Sure.
And, you know, it's the one thing that you can't create more of. So that's where leverage comes in. That's when, you know, you start hiring people and you realize, what's my time worth? And could I pay someone else to do some of these things that gobble up my time so that my attention is best focused on those activities that'll generate me more business?
Well, yeah. Let's talk about the recent move to Keller Williams, because you and your group was at Coldwell Banker forever. And I know, you mm-hmm. know, you have very fond things to say about Coldwell Banker, but talk about the transition and how that's worked out for you. And well, I know you're Absolutely. Really excited about it. So,
yeah, you know, I had such a great formative experience at CB, and their training and their environment is such a great place to get going in real estate. And I really did like it there. I think what the opportunity came out of the blue, sort of late summer of 2016. And for me, it was an opportunity to see if I could recreate that office that we had from the beginning, where it was a collaborative environment, where new people were coming in and got to work side by side with experienced agents. And it was a culture of training and collaboration. And it was kind of, you know, I've always been a little bit entrepreneurial. I had started Owl Management. It's 6 years old. So I learned a lot from that experience. And then when Tommy Choi, Josh Weinberg, Joe Zimmerman, and Mary Haight approached me and said, you know, we're thinking of opening this Keller Williams office. Do you know much about the company? I didn't actually know anything about them, but I knew that these were very smart guys that I had collaborated with in the past. And the more I learned, the more I realized there was a ton of training and systems that the company offers that are just on the next level that would take me from the business that I was doing to what do I do next? You kind of reach a plateau several times as you grow in this business. And I think I had reached a plateau at CB, and this is not the right brokerage for everybody. You know, I think if someone wants to just do a few real estate sales on the side as like a side business, you're probably better off at a more traditional brokerage where they take care of a lot of things for you. But here, what you get is a community of brokers who we're building this, nurturing this community of brokers who want to work with one another, who want to make this a full-time career, who want to build a legacy in the business that they can then hand down to the next generation, that they can treat this business like a business and create, you know, sort of the next generation of top producers in the industry. And so I'm really excited about what we've been able to do. Our growth is staggering. We've been open since March, and we're already up to, I think it's nearly 140 brokers in this office. We had to lease additional office space. We're bringing in trainers from all over the country, and the Keller Williams network of agents across the country is tremendous. They're extremely tight, and everyone is so generous with their time and knowledge.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a huge fan of The Millionaire Real Estate Agent, which was found, you know, Gary Keller's book, which I know mm-hmm. has been recently updated. And that alone is probably about the best book on how to be a successful realtor that I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
So I suspect the other voices that are trainers at Keller Williams are amazing. I did want to bring back to you mentioned Josh Weinberg. We've had him on the show, and he said something that was Tommy was not on the show at the time, but he mentioned something about Tommy, which I thought was really interesting and sort of goes back to something you had mentioned very briefly earlier. Was you were talking about, you know, in particular for new brokers, but I suspect you feel this way even today, was that getting in front of more people obviously drives the business and helps smooth out that curve of, you know, when the income comes in, mm-hmm. but meeting new people is maybe that most important activity. And I, when I was talking to Josh, I asked him, I said, what are your, his own personal, him and Tommy's personal goals for, I guess it was sometime last year we asked. And they go, yeah, we don't really think in terms of production. He said, we have really one goal, which was Tommy needs to meet 365 new people over the next year, basically one new person a day. If he does that, all of our goals will be met, you know? And I loved that because here these guys are, you know, they're already top 1% producers. They're probably working almost exclusively by referral. They're clearly, you know, doing great. And yet they're still going back to that fundamental, get more, meet more people, talk to more people.
Absolutely. You know, and it is sort of, as I've learned, especially over this year, working side by side with them, as well as some of these new agents that I've met across the country, it really is, it's about doubling down on the basics. When you have something that works well, you just have to think, how can I make it more efficient to be able to do more of that? And, you know, when you boil down the numbers and your day-to-day activities and down to the time, to the minute, you realize, you know, everyone has their source of business, their nugget, their thing that makes them special. And you should be building your business around facilitating more of that. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And Tommy is probably one of the coolest guys I have ever met. You know?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He just knows a million people. He does things from his heart, and you know, the results don't matter. He just does it out of the kindness of his heart. And his motivation, I think, is to see if he can improve the lives of everyone around him. And I was very much aligned with that philosophy, which is why I think we have such a great working relationship. And I think Joe and Mary are exactly the same way too.
Sure.
Their MKT team is amazing, and they're definitely the office leaders. They are forging ahead. They are building a seventh level real estate team right now that is incredible. I mean, I'm so excited to see what they're going to do this year and how that then I'm learning from their mistakes and their, you know, their accomplishments as I build my team to reach new levels.
Well, I do want to transition and talk about your involvement in the industry and the community because you've been so involved. But before I do that, real quickly, I had just a memory of something that you had said, and this is many years ago. I was at a YPN event and you were on a panel, and the panel was interesting because I believe it was a technology panel. And I know you're always looking at systems and always looking for technology. And at one point, there was a conversation about what's the best CRM to use. And so different people on the panel had different opinions about their preferred CRM. And you, it was really funny. You sort of stood up and said, you know, I've tried pretty much all the CRMs and they're all fine. And you go, but you know, and maybe you don't do this now, but at the time it was really great. You said, I kind of just went back to using Excel or maybe it was Google Sheets. But you're like,
Yeah.
And I thought that was great. You're like, I just decided I didn't really need those. And it was more effective for me just to sort of, you know, go back to the basic tools.
Absolutely. You know, the tool is only as useful as your ability to use it. And sure. So, and your desire to use it. And I have honestly, and I've tried another dozen since then. I'm trying a new one this year, but this one's now done by a Keller Williams agent who's running a team exactly like mine. So I'm hopefully this one will work. But I think what it comes down to is it has to be a tool that you understand that you're going to love using because you're going to use it every single day. It's the single most important tool in this business is, you know, like you were saying, what Tommy does best is getting in front of people and then following up with them. And that only works when you know who to follow up with and you keep their accurate information. So whatever you're going to use, whether it's a 3x5 note card file that's alphabetized, if sure. that's what you love and you're going to use it and it's good working for you, use it. But if you choose some fancy, you know, really expensive software and you hate it and you're never going to use it, then it's useless to you. So, you know, it comes down to building your business around the way that you work.
Yeah.
And that's true for hiring too. You know, don't hire, if you're really great taking buyers out, don't hire a buyer's agent. What you need is an admin. You need someone to do the paperwork in the office because you're really great taking buyers out of the office. You know, it's a huge mistake that agents make is the first hire they do is another agent to do the same work that they're doing. That's a huge mistake. The bigger thing you need, most agents need, the best, most successful ones, is someone to do the other stuff. Because it's a whole different skill set managing details than it is finessing people. And it's an entirely different motivation level, entirely different skill set. And so when I hired my first assistant, that's what I did. It was, I said, okay, this is all the stuff I hate doing. This is the job description I'm hiring for. Right. And so, and then from there, the systems and the software follow. Right. So, you know, you build it around the people, and the first primary person is, who are you and what are you the best at? So start with that. Where is your business coming from? What is it about you that brings the business in? And then from there, build around that. Get someone to do the other stuff that does it, that takes you away from that. You know, do that 80% of the stuff that you have to do, but only 20% of your that stuff that you that other 20% is the stuff that makes you the more money or gets you to the next level. If you can hire someone to do that 80% and focus on the 20%, or get a software tool that can do that 80%. So that you can focus on the 20% you should be doing, that's how you get successful, and that's how you reach the next level.
Absolutely. Let's transition. And by the way, very well said. And I had interviewed somebody recently who said, you know, a lot of times when people build teams, they don't realize they're likely to take a pay cut initially, meaning, you know, the overall revenue for that broker who is hiring, you know, but then over time, you know, if they're doing the things you just don't want to do, or they just take up too much of your time, you know, eventually, of course, that should grow the business, but
it will. And I tell people, if you have 15 to 20,000 to put into a checking account, set up a checking account, a business checking account. If you put in $15,000 in that account, you have 6 months salary for that person. And then after that, if you don't have, and then if it's not working after 6 months, guess what? You should probably let the person go anyway. So
right.
If you haven't made more money than you did over the previous 6 months because of that, then, you know, maybe you shouldn't have hired the person.
Yeah.
And then it'll resolve itself, right?
Very smart. Let's talk about getting involved in the community and also in the, you know, giving back to the industry and getting, because sure. I know that's a passion of yours. You've been very involved. You've been on YPN. You've founded one of the chairs of YPN. You've done some work with CAR, IAR. Can you talk a little bit about why you're involved, what you do, and maybe what you'd like other people to know about that?
Sure, absolutely. I think that part of the reason I've been so successful is I just like collaborating with others. And it's not just trying to get involved with organizations within the community, like your local chamber of commerce or your local neighborhood association or condo association. I think those are important too. And those definitely give you insight and knowledge, but it's equally as important for a broker to get involved with your local real estate association and then maybe your state and national real estate association. And there's several benefits to doing this. Number one is you get an insight into how other people are doing are practicing the business and what they're doing and how they're doing, how they work. A lot of these people who come to these associations work in very different marketplaces. Even if you're in, you know, the Chicago Association of Realtors is 14,000 brokers. And think about every neighborhood in the city and how different they are from one another. And there's different needs and different approaches and different types of housing in each of those areas. So to sit there and hear what's working for one broker in one area, which isn't being tried in your area, it's just a great way to collaborate and share knowledge. Likewise, I think also, I don't know. Do you remember that movie? It was A Beautiful Mind with Russell Crowe. And it was about that mathematician who said that Adam Smith was wrong.
Right.
Right. And I have a good friend of mine is a real estate developer, and he's got an MBA in finance, real estate finance from Kellogg. And he took a lot of classes about that, the guy who was in that. And he said, it's not well understood, but the basic premise holds true, which is, I think that a trade organization, when run well, like a union or a guild of some kind, when run well, can actually produce a higher level of quality service or product to the consumer, as well as a better working environment for the employee, as long as it's not abused in one way or the other. So, meaning when we're involved, we work together, we're facing common issues. We can also set higher standards of practice, which you can invite other brokers to live up to. And by being a member of this community, you're settling disputes between one another. You're creating an efficiency of resources by going together with for purchasing power and to get perks and benefits that you can do in bulk, which you couldn't do as an individual. And then also you are setting a level of, you know, an openness of communication among the industry, which helps business to be transacted a lot more efficiently. So, you know, I would very much encourage every broker, especially new ones who are in this industry for the first time and wondering what should I do next or how do I get to the next level, to get involved in your local real estate association. I don't just mean show up to the parties, to the drinking events. I mean, get yourself on a committee. There are so many committees in different areas. The managing broker of our office is a guy named Dave Nasso, and he's phenomenal. He chaired the Forms and Contracts Committee at the Chicago Association of Realtors for several years and literally rewrote our real estate, the association real estate contract, to adhere to the TRID regulations. And in that process, it causes a whole series of communication that makes our contracts better, that protect the buyers better and make more clarity for sellers. So the consumer benefits, and then we as agents benefit by using a more concise form that creates fewer problems between the contract and closing. So it's things like that, you know.
No question. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was going to say, if you, whatever board you're with, whether you're with Chicago Association of Realtors, Main Street, NASBAR, Three Rivers down in Joliet, the easiest way to learn about getting involved in these ways is literally call them or go to their websites, and you will see a list of all the committees. There's almost, they are starving in a good way for your involvement. They want you to be on these boards. They need you to be on these boards. Mm-hmm. And there's usually a pretty simple process to get involved and active. So contact your board and do that. And I also know that you're real passionate about RPAC, I believe, as well. Is that correct?
Sure. Yes. The Real Estate Political Action Committee is, it's an advocacy organization that is part of the National Association of Realtors and is administered mostly on the state level through each state association. And then obviously each municipal or city association then feeds into it as well. But a lot of people wonder why, you know, when you pay your dues for your association dues for MLS access and things like that, they also try to tack on voluntary, you know, $30 or $40 contribution. Sure. To RPAC. And it is really important. Those dollars have tremendous influence on our industry. You can see them at work, even in this tax plan that just came through. While, you know, it is definitely not beneficial in the way it was written for homeowners and for real estate brokers, there's a lot of things that are not as great in there as with the way we used to have it. It was a horrible, horrible bill. It was much, much worse when it first started out. And it was through the lobbying efforts of on both state level and on a national level to get in front of politicians and have the wording and language change and have certain provisions rolled back and things like that, that allowed that bill to be much less onerous than it was. And, you know, it's also a great way to get in touch with the leaders in the industry, because what I find is most of the top producers in this industry, they understand the value of contributing to, you know, a political action committee. And they realize that it's super important for maintaining their livelihood and for protecting their clients, being able to protect their clients. So they get heavily involved, and it's a great way for somebody who is new to get in front of and to get an introduction to some of these top producers. So there's just tons of benefits for getting involved in it. And the way I like to think of it, just from a basic standpoint, is, you know, if it's like paying your insurance, it's like employment insurance. It protects our industry from outside influence. And would you contribute 1% of what you earn in order to protect the other 99%?
Well, absolutely. I for sure would. And it's even way less than 1%, right? It's literally like $30.
Yes. The fair share contribution is something small. It's like 30 or 40 bucks, depending on where you are. And I mean, I contribute, I think this past year I did $5,000 toward RPAC because it was such a big year and those dollars go such a long way. There's something, there was some New York Times article that said that you get a something like a on average a 26,000% return on your investment when you do political action investments.
That's interesting. So,
well, and versus anything else. I mean, it's a multiplying effect, and we have one of the most, you know, the most active and influential trade organizations in the entire country, with one of the largest memberships of any organization in the country, and its fingers go into right down to the local political level, all the way up to the national level, and you know, politicians love realtors for their ability to network across an entire community.
No, yeah, no question. And I was talking to you offline about Beth Wanless, who we interviewed. So if you're interested in learning more about what these lobbyists do on brokers' behalf, and also not just brokers' behalf, but also consumers, go all the way back. I think it's episode 2 or 3 where we interview Beth, who is a lobbyist for RPAC, and she gets a lot more specific about exactly how to get involved and what they do and all the resources mm-hmm. that brokers have at their disposal, like through Illinois Association of Realtors, that they don't even know they have. Mm-hmm. And so that it's a great episode to listen to, sure, to really get more in depth and how that all works and why it's important. But well said. Mm-hmm. Well, I have taken up enough of your time, and this has been really, really great. What's Nico? If we do have any buyers, sellers, or renters out there that are interested in working with your group, what's the best way, or even maybe brokers that are interested in learning more about what your firm has to offer? Sure. What's the best way that anyone should reach out to you?
Well, yes. I mean, obviously, I'm always looking for clients, but I'm also always looking for talent and people who have enthusiasm and drive and are looking to make a successful career in real estate. We're hiring both at Owl Management and here in Keller Williams. And even my team, I'm always looking for someone great. But best way to reach me is probably by email. It's niko@theapostlegroup.com. That's niko@theapostlegroup.com. And I check that email all day, every day. So I would love to hear from anyone. If you have questions, I'm always happy to help. And we, you know, if you want to see some of these teams and people doing high level practice in action, you're always welcome to pop in our office. We're an office of sharing and giving and you know, just kind of the environment where we want to support one another.
Wonderful. And also visit Nico's website too. It's a great example of a really effective and aesthetically pleasing broker website. And I find I am not usually saying that about people's websites. So I feel like you guys have done a great job, you know, explaining what your team does also in just a way that I think looks really cool. So, Nico, thank you so much for being on the show. Really appreciate your time. And,
it's my pleasure. Anytime.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.